All right, nice to have you back with us. So, Woe, how are you tonight? Third base coach of the Giants, how are you?
Good, Marty. I'm doing well. I'm doing very good. And how about yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good. I know the family is listening, and I always like to say hello to the group. You know that, you know, Evan and Robin and Stella and Lolly down there, and Bonnie and Greg and Noah and Ruby up here, and Aaron's working at Byride, and of course Christina and Penny and everyone else who helps me get it together. So another week goes by, and here we are. You know, well, you're not immune to any of this stuff. You see what's going on, and I hope that baseball can get it together.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, there is certainly a lot going on, and isn't it interesting, you know, during the course of this pandemic, it's almost like we've all had so much time to sit back and think about, you know, our lives and injustices, you know, social injustice that's out there. And it's amazing what's transpiring. And in the middle of it all, of course, with the COVID, we're trying to get baseball up and running. And so we're just sitting back and watching everything play out. And hopefully we can get it together, Marty. I think the country needs it. I think that, you know, I heard you mention earlier in your show that, you know, that's what players do. They play. And I think it's healthy. It creates a lot of jobs in society, just not for the ball players and ownership, but the people that work at the ballpark, the entertainment value. So much, so many jobs are at risk here if we can't get it together. Mm-hmm. So hopefully the two sides will come up with an agreement and we'll get some a little more sense of normalcy back into our country.
Yeah, I agree. Well said. Very well said. You know, I did want to mention one thing about River Islands. I know we talked a lot about it last week. But, you know, well, and Lori is in the real estate market. Real estate is happening. There's not a lot of inventory, but real estate is happening. And maybe River Islands is a spot that people should really take a look at.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, Marty. I mean, Lori's been extremely busy. And as you said, there's not a lot of inventory. So if you're in a position that you're selling or you are buying, it's a great time to buy. That's for sure. I think a lot of these homes that go on the market because there's low inventory, they're getting multiple offers on them. And I know one place that has plenty of homes for sale, and that's River Islands. And they have all kinds of floor plans. So they have, you know, something for everybody out there. And we talk about it every week about all the amenities they have there with the walking trails and the bocce ball and the lakes. And so it's just a great opportunity. If you haven't checked into it, everybody should take a look at what River Islands has to offer.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to get in touch with Colleen next week. I'm going to take a ride out there next week or the week after and absolutely take a look at it and see. But you're right. There's plenty of floor plans, homes, and things like that. And it's a good point you make that this is a time to take a good look at River Islands. All right. Well, it is baseball time. We'll bring in Bill Lasky. Bill, how are you tonight?
Gentlemen, I'm doing fine. I'm going to greet you with a Bob Dylan song from the early 60s, Blowing in the Wind, because here on the peninsula, it's blowing like a Friday night game at Candlestick.
Hey, Bill, that's well said. No doubt about it. We're getting the same wind over here in the East Bay.
Oh, it's ridiculous outside. I mean, I look out, the trees are halfway over already. It's been like that for a couple nights. But the Bay Area, we know how the weather changes so fast. It was 90 degrees in the middle of the week, and today I wake up and I got my sweatshirt back on. So we just need some baseball, Marty and Ron, to get this thing right, fired up.
Boy, that's the truth. You know, you bring up that image of Candlestick, and, you know, obviously you coach there. And did you wear that rubber suit underneath? Did you have, like, something under the uniform? And, Bill, did you pitch with something like that?
Well, you know, that rubber suit was very popular back in the day. Mizuno made it, and it didn't breathe, and it would keep you extremely warm. And I never did that. You know, when I managed in the minor leagues, I always felt, you know, being the manager and the leader of the team, I didn't want to, you know, make it look like I was freezing. So if the players were in just sleeves, you know, I didn't wear my jacket. I put about 15 layers of clothes on, so they didn't know I had all those layers underneath. But, you know, I didn't want to look like I was too cold. So I didn't wear that out on the field. I tried to dress just like the players.
Well, one of the things Joe Morgan used to do was right before he'd put his uniform on, he'd coat his body with baby oil, and it would keep the heat in. Mm-hmm. And he would wait till it dry, of course, but that was one of the things the older players did, and it definitely worked. Of course, you had to wear sleeves and all the other stuff, the heavy layers like Ron was talking. But mostly, you know, when I pitched there, it was a lot of heat on the shoulder and the elbow, and then continuing to do it during the game just to keep that body warm.
You know, it brings up Ron Hunt. I don't know if you remember Ron Hunt. He was a second baseman for the Dodgers, Mets, and Giants at some point. But I think he got hit like, I don't know, 300 times in his career. And one year he got hit so many times and that he was wearing a rubber suit under his uniform to absorb the blows. But he had to do it surreptitiously. He couldn't tell anybody about it. And that's what he did in those days.
Well, those rubber suits really did work, and I like to be warm because I always wore the long underwear under my pants. You know, growing up in Connecticut, we were always in the cool. I never wore shorts. I never wanted to take a ground ball in shorts. So even with baseball pants and I wear long underwear, and I do what Bill had talked about, the baby oil routine. I do that now at Oracle Park. I've been doing that for years at the Real Cold Nights. But we had one pitcher, Butch Edge. I don't know, Bill, if you remember Butch Edge, a right-handed pitcher that was a teammate of mine back with the Phoenix Giants. And Butch Edge, we stayed in a hotel not far from the old Phoenix Muni ballpark where we were playing, and he decided to run to the ballpark. He lived about a mile away, and he ran to the ballpark in the middle of the summer in Phoenix in one of those rubber suits. And lo and behold, he was supposed to pitch that night. He got to the ballpark, heat exhaustion, he ended up in the hospital. So I do not recommend those rubber suits in the heat.
No. Ron Hunt did
Is the rubber suit comparable to like what a surfer wears? Is that what you're talking about, Ron? Because I never wore one. Is it comparable to that?
No, it's a little bit less, but it's the Mizuno. The Mizuno made a top that it didn't breathe at all. It would make you sweat, and they were very, very popular. We had them for BP with the Giants at Candlestick. You know, right. We'd wear them for batting practice, but once the game started, I didn't wear it. But it was very effective of keeping the heat in.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about a couple of players. I always enjoy this segment, and we've got plenty to talk about tonight. And, and Bill, the first one I'm going to bring up, it is his birthday today. He's a right-hander, University of Oklahoma. He was one of the friendliest guys. On the day he would pitch, he'd talk to you, and that's Russ Ortiz. So, Russ Ortiz had some big, big, big games for the Giants. Of course, Game 6 of the World Series against the Angels down in Anaheim. But Russ Ortiz.
Yeah, well, Russ Ortiz is one player that I came up through the minor leagues with him. He was drafted in 95 or 96 out of Oklahoma, and he was drafted as a closer. And he played for me in AAA, and we both got to the major leagues at the same time. My first year was 98. His first full year was 98. And he started out as a closer, as I said, but after half the season in 98, he became a starter. And one pitching coach had a lot to do with the development of Russ Ortiz. He's told me the story that Ron Peronowski, the great Dodger pitching coach and Giant pitching coach, was the one that really left an impression with him. And he used to talk a lot about Fernando and Dave Stewart, Oral Hershiser, Bob Welch. And he would share with Russ the way these guys would go about his job. And one story Russ told me is one day he was walking off the mound in spring training. He gave up several hits in the inning. He was real mad. He walks off the mound, and he said Perry met him before he got to the dugout. He was visibly upset. And Perry said to him, "What's wrong? What are you so upset for?" And he goes, "You know," he goes, "you think any other pitcher, everybody gives up hits. You didn't give up any runs. You better learn to compose yourself. I mean, you think you're better than the other guys?" So anyways, Russ said that stuck with him. And if you watch Russell pitch for the Giants, he was always very composed and under control. Mm-hmm. He never showed his emotion. But, you know, that was a lesson that he learned from Ron Peronowski, who did a lot of good things for Russ Ortiz.
Mm. Boy, Ron, you hit it on the head. He was so composed. There was nothing to get upset about. He walked a few hitters in earlier his career, but I was looking seven straight years with 33 or more starts after that first year as a reliever, and he put some phenomenal numbers with the Giants, 18, 14, 17, 14 straight wins. That's in four straight years, and then he hooked up with Atlanta and took off. He had 36 wins there. But I remember the big curveball. I remember the spot fastball, the cross seam, because he's sneaky. He was sneaky fast, but he could pinpoint in, you know, good upper body, good arm strength, and a character, like you say, a lion. He never showed his emotions, but he was fierce. He wanted to beat the opponent every time. But he was really a good addition for the Giants back in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, I remember him as a guy who was not afraid to pitch in traffic. You know, there were people on base with this guy. I mean, there was, you know, the innings were agonizing and deep counts. And then somehow he got out of it. When he had to get the out, he got out of it. And I think probably pitching in the big ballpark probably helped him a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you what, Marty, I just have to say, when you start talking about these older players, I mean, Russ Ortiz, I have the opportunity to see him. When we go down to Phoenix, he'll come by the ballpark once in a while. And you're not going to find a better person off the field, on the field, period, than Russ Ortiz. And that's what I love about him. And, you know, he is such a good guy. To give you an example of the type of individual he and his wife Stacy are, you know, he started a golf clothing company, and I'm going to plug it here. It's called 2ggapparel.com, and all the proceeds go to charity. And he's doing quite well. He's had this for years now. And this is what he does with his time. And it's great to see him down there in Arizona when he comes to the ballpark.
You know, Ron, you hit it perfectly. He does so much for people. He came to fantasy camp a couple of years, and, of course, all the campers loved him because he was so genuine, friendly, courteous, told stories. But, you know, one of the reasons why he couldn't come anymore is kids were getting older, and he just said, hey, Bill, I want, you know, special time with my kids. I want to be there. I want to bond with them. And, you know, that's the Christian way he is, too, because he's a very Christian athlete. And just his whole family, they bond and they do different things. I follow him on Facebook, hit him up. He takes campers and goes to all these different, you know, national parks from, you know, all around Arizona, as you say, lives there. But just a genuine person, A to Z. And like you said, his clothing line, it goes everything to charity. And he puts that out on LPGA golfers, PGA golfers, and just a great human being.
Good guy. Yeah, when I first met him, he told me stories about his grandpa. His grandpa used to take him to the games. And just to hear when he used that word, whoa, and Bill, it was family to me, and I liked it. But I'm going to ask you this, you know, game six, he comes out, you know, and then, of course, you know, we know what happens after that. We don't have to go through the gory details, but he pitched a hell of a game until he came out. And I guess his history was you take him out kind of at that point of the game.
Well, you know, at that point, he had done a great job. And we had that, you know, we had that great bullpen that year with Fifi Rodriguez and Worrell and Rob Nen. Even though Rob was beat up a little bit, that was our recipe all year long, the 7th, 8th, and 9th, those three guys. And, you know, the Spezio at-bat to Rodriguez, I don't know, it was a 14-pitch at-bat where he, you know, squeaked that home run right down the right field line. You know, that was the killing blow, and nobody saw that coming. And you got to tip your hat sometimes to the opponents. But Russ did a great job. I always loved when he was on the mound because, Bill, you summed him up. He had that cut fastball. He could spot it down and away. He was very easy to defend behind because you knew where they were going to hit the ball. You know, they were going to hit the ball the right center if they hit it in the air. They didn't pull him very much unless it was a breaking ball because he threw that cut fastball down and away so good. But, yeah, great memories of Russ Ortiz. I sure wish we would have got that one game in game six. I know he wished he had the win there as well as everybody in the Bay Area.
Well, he had the ball in the big game, and he came through. And today is his birthday, Whoa. So you chose Russ Ortiz, and very fortuitous you chose him on his birthday. So it was a good pick. Good pick.
Happy birthday, Russ.
As they say on the post-game show, good pick. Good pick.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. The other one, we're going to go to the outfield. And he only spent a few years with the Giants. And very interesting man, a very interesting man, and a great major league career, and did well when he was here with the Giants. That's Marquise Grissom. Whoa. How about Marquise Grissom?
Yeah, well, Marquise, we had him at the end of his career. He was in his late 30s. And, of course, he had a history with Felipe because he played for Montreal, Atlanta, and I think Cleveland, and ended up with us. And Felipe absolutely loved, you know, the person, the man, and the player. And we had him here. And one thing I remembered about him before he came to us is how good of a center fielder he was. You know, everybody talked about Andrew Jones, right? How good he was. And one thing that made Andrew Jones was so great in the outfield is he was not scared to play shallow. And he went back on the ball as good as anybody. And Marquise Grissom did the same thing with us. He had the ability to play shallow. Some outfielders, you know, you can't get them to play shallow because they're not comfortable. They don't want that ball getting over their head. But with the speed he had and the athleticism, he could go back on the ball. And again, just another great human being. He was probably one guy that you wanted on your club, just not for his ability on the field, but for what he did in that clubhouse. Lighthearted, kept people smiling and laughing, and extremely competitive. And that's a great combination to have on a baseball team.
It sure is, and smiles all the time. He was always the light. And like you said, Ron, you caught him at the last couple of years of a 17-year career. And the first thing I remember was when he first came up with Montreal, how fast he was. Stolen bases, it seemed like he was just on a base and it was gone. Center field, a couple of gold gloves. But then he went to Atlanta after Montreal, and that's where they won the World Series. And he was ALCS MVP, just hit the ball, had a great series. And he's played with a few other teams. But he did add that spark in that Giants lineup, hit over 300 with them for 1 year with the Giants and just the platoon areas he played. But just a delight on the team. He was great in the clubhouse. And you know, you're talking about a guy that took care of his family, too. He bought, I guess, siblings' houses in Atlanta when he was in the big leagues. I just read a little paragraph about that tonight, and I was just like, how nice of a guy is that? You know, he takes care of his siblings in Atlanta by buying them houses, and there was more than six or seven houses. So another family man, a Christian guy. He's doing a lot of things for charity in Atlanta now with kids and kids camps.
Well, Bill, you said siblings, 14.
Wow.
We should have sent him to the River Islands. Well, he could have his own River Islands.
There you go. He had a look out there. He could have a house for all of them. 14.
Come on,
siblings.
14.
Wow.
14.
Wow,
and
I didn't see that. I just saw where he bought houses for his siblings. And I was like, how cool is that to have enough money to just buy people houses in your family and shut them up? I'm sure there's a lot of major league players that do that. We just don't hear about them. And there's one guy that's got a golden heart for his family.
Yeah, Warwick Dunn in football. I remember the stories with him and what he did. I remember those in New Orleans. But 17 years in the big leagues, 2,251 hits, 429, mm-hmm. Bill, you're right, stolen bases. And, well, wasn't he an artist, too? Didn't he do – I think he did artwork, didn't he?
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, he was an artist when he was on the field back in his heyday. I know that. But, no, I don't remember him, you know, like Jose Alguacil painting and Omar Vizquel. Was a painter, but I didn't see that side of Grip. His nickname was Grip. I don't know why they called him Grip. I don't know if Felipe gave him that because he couldn't pronounce Grissom. Maybe he just called him Grip, but that was his nickname. And what a delight. This guy is a great guy on the team. He was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he was, yeah. Well, Doug Greenwald is probably listening. He'll come up with why they called Marquise Grissom Grip. I'd like to know. All right, we'll move to the coaching box. And, well, this was a name when I kind of looked, you know, for different years of Giant coaches and things like that. And I don't think I ever got to meet him or know him, and that is Gene Glenn.
Yeah, Gino. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I got to the big leagues in 98, and I think he came over in 2005. He had a history with Felipe, another guy that spent time in the Montreal organization. And he's up from, I think, Minnesota. He's from Minnesota. His kids played ball. And I remember when he came to us, he had coached with the Rockies. And I remembered him as the third base coach with the Rockies. I always respected his ability to coach third base. I really didn't know him. And I remember when Felipe came over and he was looking for a third base coach and he named Gene Glenn. I was excited to get to know the guy because I looked at him as a veteran coach. He had been doing it a while and he was on the other side. So I was looking forward to pick his brain and get to know him, and he did not disappoint. You know, he was an infield coach and managed in the minor leagues. So he cut his teeth in the minor leagues like a lot of great coaches and really knew his craft, and he's still doing it today. You know, he's out in Minnesota, coaching in Minnesota right now. So he's had a heck of a career, and he was a heck of a guy. And if we got time, I'll tell you a quick story after Bill gives us his recollections of Gene Glenn. I don't know if you knew him, Bill, did you?
No, I didn't. I'm like Marty. I remember his name and I remember on the staff, but, you know, I kind of looked him up and cheated while you were talking, and he's just a baseball guy, you know, starting with the Rockies in 94, and he was with the Marlins in 2019 in Montreal, the Cubs, the Giants, the Twins. So the knowledge and the teaching of Gene Glenn shows you how much character he has and how much he knows of the game, because you just don't coach with six organizations at the big league level unless you know what you're doing. And there's no doubt he has that insight and he knows how to teach. So I didn't know him. I know his name, but reading about him, there's no doubt about it. He's a genuine big league coach.
Mm. Well, we heard from Doug Greenwald and he has no idea why Marquise Grissom was called Grip. And I said, if you don't know, then we're out of luck. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
If Doug doesn't know. So, Doug, do some research.